Bart's house.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the chapter entitled The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. And we're reading text 25 through 32, and 32 is on the board. It's the one we'll chant responsibly. So I'm thinking to, I guess, read all the verses leading up to 32. Because none of them have a purport, so it'll just be the Sanskrit and the translation. So, text 25. Pumso yam samshrite hetur asantosorita kamayog. Yadrichayo papanena santosho muktaye smritaha. And the translation to text 25. Material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence. Text 26. Yadricha labha tustasya tejo viprasya vatate tat prashanyati asantoshad ambasevasukusanihi. The translation for text 26. A Brahmana who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied Brahmana decreases, as fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it. Text 27. Tasma trini padani eva virnetva dvaradasha pat etavataiva sidhoham vitamyava prayojanam. Text 27 translation. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased. For the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. Text 28. Sri Shuka Uvacha Iti Uktaha Sahasana Maha Vanchataha Pratikriyatam Vamanasya Mahim Gatum Jagraha Jata Bhajanam. In the translation to text 28, Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, Bali smiled and told him, all right, take whatever you like. To confirm his promise to give Amanadev the desired land, he then took up his water pot. Text 29. Vishnave shamam pradasyantam usana asureshvaram janam shikritsitam vishno shishyam prahavidam vataham. In the translation for text 29. Understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose, Sukracharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple, who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadev. In text 30. Shishuko vacha esha vairochana sakshad bhagavan vishnur avyayaham Kasya pad aditir jato devanam karya sadhakaha. And the translation for text 30. Sukracharya said, O son of Virochana, this brahmachari in the form of a dwarf is directly the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Accepting Kasyapa Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interests of the demigods. Text 31. Pratishrutam tvayitasmai yad anartam agyanatam Na sadhu manye daityanam mahan upagato nanyaha. And the translation for text 31. You do not know what a dangerous position you have accepted by promising to give him land. I do not think that this promise is good for you. It will bring great harm to the demons. And text 32, which we'll chant responsibly. Esha te sthanam aishvaryam Shriyam tejo yasaha shrutam Dasyati achidya sakrayaha Maya manavako hari Esha te sthanam aishvaryam Shriyam tejo yasa shrutam Dasyati achidya shakrayam Maya manavako hari Esha te sthanam aishvaryam Shriyam te joyasa shrutam. Dasya ti achidya shakraya. Maya manavako hari. Please chant. Esha te sanam aishwaryam. Shriyam te joyasa shrutam. Tasya ti achidya shakraya. Maya manavako hari. Sham te sanam aishwaryam. Priyam te joyasa shrutam. Tasya ti achidya shakraya. Maya manavako hari. Esha te sanam aishwaryam. Shriyam te joyasa shrutam. Asya ti achidya sakraya. Maya manavako hari. Jai Baladev, you've been trying to say the verse several times. Please go ahead. Please go. So this is a different kind of game. Esha te sanam aishwaryam. Tia te joyasa srutam. Tasya ti achidya shakraya. Maya manavako hari. Esha te sthanam aishwaryam. Shriyam te joyasa shrutam. Tasya ti achidya sakraya. Maya manavako hari. The word for word, Esha. This person falsely appearing as a Brahmana. Is it? Both. Yes, indeed, both. Te of you, Stana, the land in possession, Aishwaryam, the riches, Shriyam, the material beauty, Tejaha, the material power, Yasaha, the reputation, Shrutam, the education, Dasyati, will give, Achidya, taking from you, Shakraya, unto your enemy Lord Indra, Maya, falsely appearing, Manavakaha, a Brahmachari son of a living being, Hari, he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Okay. The translation for text 32. This person falsely appearing as a Brahmachari is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. After taking everything from you, he will deliver it to Indra, your enemy. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this regard that the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes away all his miseries. And in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education, and beauty. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yas yaham anugriha nami harishye tadanam sanai. The Lord said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the first installment of my mercy towards the devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is the special favor of the Lord towards a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions, which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness, by tactics, the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here, Sukracharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus, he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one delivers his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, Savai Manaha Krishna Padararavindaya, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, he was attached to material possessions, and therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Lord Vamana to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacya Deshatarine Anjakalpa Srivyas Chakri Pasanduvyeva Chab Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Lord Vamanadev, he addressed Bali Maharaj, O King, the best of those who give charity, I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift I shall be very pleased, for the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. generally, becoming happy is a feeling of having been favored by circumstances, and in that way one is experiencing pleasure. Lord Vamanadev, he indicates what he considers happiness to be, and or what for him has been favored by circumstance. And for him, it's to receive what is absolutely needed. So it's very precise how he views happiness. So one can say that happiness is due to receiving that that had been deficient, or receiving that one was looking for, that was required. Something that was lacking and receiving it. There's a comparison of 3 kinds of happiness that Lord Krishna spells out. And this is from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 25th chapter, in the 29th verse. He says, Satvikam sukham atmoham vishayotam tu rajasam tamasam moha danyotam nirgunam mad apasrayam. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion, and happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But that happiness found within me is transcendental. Now, this view of happiness that's expressed by Lord Vamanadeva is that happiness derived from the self. It's the happiness of a person who already knows perfectly well that he need not identify with his body, looking for happiness that way, but rather he's identifying with his true self and he's looking for happiness in that way. He's understanding himself as being a fragmental part of the Supreme Lord. So that's where the happiness is being looked for. and it's actually a happiness that's found in following principles. And these are nicely laid out by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Upadesamrita, or the Nectar of Instruction. So in text 2, and I've really found myself focusing a great deal on this because it's somehow connected well, and it was brought up in an earlier class as well, that these particular principles that he's laying out, they address the spiritual duty of somebody who has this kind of understanding that one is a fragmental part of the Supreme Lord. So the principles are looking at how one's controlling one's mind and senses, because after all, one's not identifying with the body, so therefore one has to bring all the senses and the mind under control, because without actually doing so, one can't advance in one's spiritual understanding. So it's an essential component, and it's very much interconnected with this idea of happiness, that control of the senses and the mind is essential. So I'll read the particular text too, which lays out these principles. Ajahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha Jnana Sangas Cha Lolyam Cha Sabir Bhaktir Vinashyati. One's devotional service is spoilt when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. Now I'm going to examine each of these in relation to what we're looking at here with Lord Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj, because it's very much interrelated to the happiness that Lord Vamanadeva saw as, you know, the perfect kind of happiness. Just taking that is absolutely essential. So it's so much interconnected with these principles laid out by Srila Rupa Goswami. So the first principle he lays out is eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. So these are the things that spoil devotional service, or spoil that moving forward in one's understanding as being a fragmental part of the Supreme Lord. So here, Lord Vamanadeva is asking for only 3 paces of land. And earlier, Bali Maharaj also said to Lord Vamanadeva, you may ask of me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. So both have the correct understanding. You know, one takes what's needed. And that was in an earlier verse, I think the 20th verse. Now, the second principle is over-endeavoring for mundane things that are usually very difficult to obtain. So anyway, before I go to the more serious part, I'll touch on this myself because I find myself falling into this trap. Sometimes I'm thinking because of having a mind that needs everything ordered. So if I'm attending to something, then all the components that make up that particular thing have to be in place. So sometimes I have to shop for a particular item to have something perfect. So let's say it's, okay, the most dull one apart from the household things, but let's say it's like a clothing item. So I need to actually find a shawl that coordinates with the sari. Let's just take a very mundane example. Then it's actually not so easy to obtain exactly what one's looking for if one has a set thing in mind. So then it will mean that, say I have a brown, sorry, okay, I'm going to look for a brown shawl that has this kind of pattern. And one has to do like a lot of research. So it's actually not easy to obtain. So now, and a lot of effort is required. I mean, it would be a lot less effort if I just actually thought, whatever crosses my path, whether it matches or doesn't match, it's quite in order. So I will walk to the gift store and what's available, I will get that and it'll be in order. But the mind is not like that. It finds itself looking for that's difficult to obtain. So there's over-endeavor, and this is not so good for devotional life because it takes time and thought. So, but fortunately, I sometimes get service that requires working with aesthetics, and so coordinating things then is quite in order. I can really devote my full mental attention. This kind of endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain is reminiscent of that definition of happiness that was given by Lord Krishna that's based on sense gratification. Or as Lord Vamanadeva puts it, it's fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. So Lord Vamanadeva viewed it that way. So he's in fact giving this as the reason for their being discontent. Because as one's going through one's material existence in the material world, it's been designed in a way that one's obliged to work. And so if one then is using this approach that one's naturally obliged to work, but then one is using it to acquire more and more money or more and more shawls, I don't know, there's a reason for discontent happening. And that's due to the fact that there's a kind of intoxicating nature of this pursual. And it causes discontent because one knows one is actually wants to give attention to that is in relation to the self, but instead is having to give attention to more things on the mundane plane. And it's very time consuming. So there's this intoxicating nature for these sensual delights, and it also brings all kinds of suffering. And that feeling of being bound up because of one's attachments. One can't escape. One gets caught up in a certain pattern. And, it occupies thought. It occupies one's time. It can even cut into time that would be better utilized in some devotional activity or direct devotional activity. Then the third principle that's been touched on here is talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. That one's sort of self-explanatory. And the fourth principle that Srila Rupa Goswami outlines that's connected to this idea of functioning in a way that's conducive to furthering one's understanding of being a part of Krishna and following the principles that enhance that and don't detract from that. So here's another one that can cause trouble. And this one is very significant in terms of this discussion here. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. In this particular section that we're looking at here in these many verses that we read today, Sukracharya, he actually called for a rejection of the scriptural rules and regulations because he considered that Bali Maharaj had put himself into a dangerous position by telling Lord Vamanadev, all right, take whatever you like. So for Sukracharya, Bali Maharaj had put himself into a dangerous position by virtue of the fact that the, and he put it this way, there was a certain front that was being presented, but it wasn't the actual personality. So he put it that this Brahmana dwarf is actually the imperishable supreme personality of Godhead. So he found fault with that. And in a further purport, completely different section of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada points out that Sukracharya didn't know this principle that a devotee follows. So the principle a devotee follows is that the devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. It's so important for a devotee. And Sukracharya was oblivious of this principle. Sukracharya's view was that if a religious principle doesn't affect one's material condition, then it, you can accept it. This is actually his view. And so what that means is that one shouldn't accept a religious principle if it hampers one's material prosperity. This was Sukracharya's view. It's a very interesting view, yeah? So you can see how there's a very different angle from which each of the two personalities are coming. So his concern was the concern of a person functioning in this material world. And his concern was that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and these are his words, has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. So he's seen it as very detrimental. Things are going to be removed from the person, which is consistent with the view that he's holding, that you know, one's material prosperity is going to be harmed. So if Lord Vamanadev fulfills his promise, or Bali Maharaj fulfills his promise to Vamanadev, then actually Bali Maharaj will be in a very, what would be the word, kind of poverty-stricken condition. His material prosperity will have been harmed. And so from a perspective of a devotee, it's actually seen as a special favor of the Supreme Personality of God to take away the possessions of one if one is attached to those possessions. It's actually seen as a favor, a special favor. It's like a blessing. So, so the attachment that we have here, Sukracharya looking at, is really, he's looking at happiness that's based on gratifying the senses. So therefore he can say in this particular section, he can say that, or have the view that Bali Maharaj's promise would not be good for him, and it would bring harm to, in fact, all his followers too. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he analyzes that there's basically, according to all the Vedas, the Smritis, there's three divisions of religious life. So there's karma, there's jnana, and there's bhakti. So in the bhakti division, there's certain rules, and the rules, according in the analysis of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that there has to be indifference, there has to be a performance of activities favorable to devotion, and one also has to follow certain prohibitions. And the prohibitions that one is following in the bhakti aspect of religious life, so to speak, is that they're the same prohibitions you find for that are there in the jnana section. So these prohibitions are like this. One shouldn't be indulging in activities where one's looking for a result. One naturally shouldn't indulge in any forbidden activities. And one shouldn't also maintain attachments to sense enjoyment. In the jnana section, there's also mentioned that what's wanted is renunciation, sannyas, detachment, and discussions of the difference between matter and spirit. So these are, anyway, just bearing this in mind, we'll come to how it relates to Sukracharya. This I'm drawing from a very nice booklet from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Illuminations on Bhakti. And in the jnana division, there's these prohibitions that are also followed by persons in the Bhakti section. are a little different from what takes place with those who are in the Karma Kanda section. In the Karma Kanda section of religious life, there isn't this needing to be fixed in knowledge, which comes with the jnana section. and in Sukracharya's case, he actually is failing in one of the prohibitions from the jnana section, because we'll take it, he hasn't come to bhakti yet. So he's failing in one of the jnana sections, and that prohibition is to have a kind of fruitive or looking for a result kind of flavor in his which we see in his response to Maharaj Bali. Because he says, all wealth, education, etc. would be delivered to your enemy Indra. So he has a kind of, there's a fruitive flavor there, you know, wanting a specific result. So he's concerned with what will be the result of Bali Maharaj allowing Lord Vamana to take what he needs. So according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, somebody who's in this jnana position, which it appears Sukracharya is, one has to remain in that position following those prohibitions. So one has to be very cautious. So those prohibitions, again, is that any kind of fruitive activity, looking for a result, is prohibited for somebody who's on that jnana platform of you know, religious activity. So this is necessary until one comes to the platform of being able to have a taste for devotional service. It's very necessary. So this is a sensitive area because Sukracharya is showing a flavor that's kind of geared towards looking for results from following the regulations. So he's going against one of the prohibitions for being on the Gyana platform. And moving on to the fifth principle, that's part of practicing devotional life in a favorable way, is that one shouldn't be associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. So this is an interesting thing because Bali Maharaj now has to make a decision whether to act according to the direction of Sukracharya, who doesn't have a taste for devotional life. He hasn't come to the Bhakti platform yet. And he also has to examine whether Sukracharya is acting according to the regulative principles of Vedic injunction. You know, is he remaining within those prohibitions for somebody on the Gyana platform? So this is an important juncture, this part that we've just read, because it means that Bali Maharaj has to make a particular decision. He's hearing something, and this is his spiritual master. So I'm trying to analyze it and sort of highlight how it's important because he has to make a decision himself. So one verse came. This is from the first canto, the second chapter, and the seventh verse. Vasudev Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayapita Gyanati Asavarayam Gyanam Chayat Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So, this is the result of devotional service. So, Bali Maharaj is pointing out what the problem is, you know, if one has like that little bit desire for some result from one's material activities. And this is the result of if one has that taste for devotional life, one's acquiring causeless knowledge and detachment. And when Srila Prabhupada is commenting on this particular verse that's pointing out, you could say, the benefits of devotional life, causeless knowledge and detachment. He states that one who's not situated on this platform has to comply with the ordinary injunctions of the Vedic literature. Otherwise, and this is significant, one risks becoming inimical towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is very significant, I thought, because this is pointing to what's actually where Sukracharya is going towards in his mood. He's actually going to become inimical towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead because, or Lord Vamanadev, because of the fact that he's not strictly sticking to what he should be sticking to, the prohibitions being on the Gyana platform. And in the case of Sukracharya, indeed, his argument, if one looks at sticking to Vedic injunctions, is such that we'll come to see it comes to be questioned by Bali Maharaj. And particularly, he's even going into the area of the forbidden activities. He's actually, later on, we find out he's actually even proposing being somewhat untruthful to Bali Maharaj. He comes to propose being untruthful, which would fall into the category of forbidden activities. That's definitely an understood thing. One cannot not be truthful. So he's going to come to propose to Bali Maharaj that he must go back on his word, where he said, you know, take whatever you like to Lord Vamanadev. Sukracharya is going to come to present a whole argument of how Bali Maharaj must go back on his word. So Srila Prabhupada contrasts this position, being on the kind of Jnana platform and needing to stick to the prohibitions, as being a complete contrast to one who's developed great faith in devotional service, because there one doesn't hesitate to do anything that will further the mission of Lord Krishna. So that's what one's full attention goes to, what will actually be something that will allow for Lord Krishna, his mission, to move forward. And we find that this is the position of Bali Maharaj, being on that devotional platform. He's going to have to make a decision that's based on being on the bhakti platform, and we know that it has to be that he's not going to hesitate to do anything that's going to further Lord Vamanadeva's mission. Even though his spiritual master describes to him that that mission involves giving things to Lord Indra, or giving possessions to Lord Indra, doesn't stop Bali Maharaj. I mean, that is the position of one in devotion, not hesitating to do that that will please Lord Krishna, or in this case, Lord Vamanadeva. So these were some thoughts that came on this section. If anybody has any thoughts connected to this.
Hare Krishna. This is quite loud.
It's a little echo.
Ask the question slightly further.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. So, with these verses, there's a juxtaposition between Bali Maharaj and Shukra Acharya. Whereas Bali Maharaj is on the platform of pure bhakti, and Shukracharya is still on the jnana platform, and there's some error there due to the lack of bhakti. If the bhakti was there, then that error wouldn't be there. So it's easy to laugh at, you know, Shukracharya's position. However, we are not on the pure bhakti platform. So the subtle difference there. So it's easy to smirk that, you know, he's being dishonest by not surrendering everything for the favor of the Lord. Some dishonesty arises. I think this is actually a very subtle thing. And on the sadhana bhakti platform where we are, that is a symptom of the areas where we're not fully surrendering. So, for instance, the specific context here is only accept that which is absolutely needed. So this is coming with the realization, not just the understanding, but the full realization that Krishna is providing everything that we need. Right? That's why it's being used in the context of sannyas even. It's talking about sannyas. Fully dependent on the Lord. And not endeavoring separately to acquire anything to protect one's well-being even. So we can see in sadhana bhakti where that's happening. And in the purport, Prabhupada was talking about the mind. So when one fully surrenders that material endeavor to Krishna, that no need to endeavor materially but invest fully in bhakti, that's my primary investment, then the mind's at peace. And that follows with the previous verse, like verse 25 of this chapter. It's saying that the material existence causes discontent, and that happiness cannot follow discontent. So when one is endeavoring to secure something, thinking that they must do it by their own effort, then naturally the discontent is there and one cannot be happy. But the mind becomes at peace when one's fully surrendered, just accepting what Krishna is providing. And fortunately, through the Varnashram system and with even what we have in ISKCON, the sannyasis, they're on that platform, so they're already there they're fully dependent on the Lord. But what we have here is the brahmacharya ashram. We also have where we can practice that in sadhana bhakti, where everything's providing, being provided for the brahmacharya ashram. So if one fully accepts that, one has the opportunity in the process of sadhana bhakti to live as a sannyasi in terms of sadhana. So one can take fully advantage of that. That's one huge benefit we have, that in ISKCON we have varnashram in this sense. Yeah, Hare Krishna.
It is an interesting comment. looking at the advantages of seeing the principle at work as a brahmachari, the principle of taking it that one need not be endeavoring to take care of one's material needs as a brahmachari, because in that particular ashram, it's very visible, and as part of one's practice to adhere to that principle of accepting that that's provided. So your particular conclusion from looking at this subject was that it's akin to being a sannyasi by virtue of the fact that one can cultivate that complete dependence on Lord Krishna. Just accepting that fundamental principle that one isn't endeavoring extraneously to fulfill one's material needs. Just so that's a very nice meditation, particularly for one in the brahmachari ashram, just adhering to that principle is what allows for that further, deeper understanding of one's relationship with Lord Krishna. So it's very pivotal, particularly in the brahmachari ashram. So thank you for concluding that it was very much akin to being a sannyasi just by virtue of following that one principle. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice points. The points you were made in a class that I'd like to comment and question on is, you were saying our happiness is favored by circumstances. And you also mentioned our taste for devotion. So the tendency is that our taste for devotion is usually based on circumstances. And the tendency is that we all have a good nature and our bad nature. Generally speaking, our bad nature is like Sukracharya, don't surrender to Krishna, surrender to pornography, that's one of our favorite ones, or surrender to a YouTube like and dislike button. And if somehow we are able to come to Bhagavatam class and, you know, at least try, the tendency is that when we sort of advance, so-called advance, we get some honor, some praise, and then we say, I have a taste for devotion. But as soon as someone gets more honor than us, our Sukracharya mind says, don't surrender to Krishna, surrender to envy, or if somebody insults us, it says surrender to vengeance. So my question is, how do we actually develop a taste for actually devotion in all circumstances? Like that verse says, Narayana Pada Savrina Kuteshana Bibhyasi Swarga Pavarga Nadakeshu Apitulyata Nardashinaha. Lord Shiva glorified Chittaketu because even though he was cursed to become a demon, he was still happy because he had a taste for devotion. It wasn't dependent on the circumstances. So what are some tendencies to not fool ourselves to think it's very hard to get taste for the devotion, so how do we not fool ourselves to think we have taste for devotion? So,
one of the, the question is to just rephrase so it's clear. The question was, one may be in a situation where one has a particular taste for some material activity and some were given. Could be anything from pornography or YouTube, whatever subject matter one has a taste for. And then on the other hand, so it's akin or similar to Sukracharya having some attachment to some material something or other, getting material results. And then on the other hand, one is practicing devotion, but one finds that it's so easy to actually get diverted from devotion because of envy surfacing in the heart, and maybe even being dishonored in some way. So again, the question comes, how is it that one can actually hold on to that devotional side of one's life, even with having to deal with the external dishonor, the internal envy, the material attachments. So in the discussion of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was pointing to the necessity of following those prohibitions that are there for those on the Jnana platform. So the particular prohibition that I guess I was highlighting here was, not indulging in those activities that have a particular result. So let's say one has the craving for YouTube hearing. So, I don't know how long they are, but not very long, I guess 5-10 minutes. YouTube blips on whichever subject. So let's say one has that particular craving because the result is some sort of mental peace or some sort of mental satisfaction because it's something known or it's a subject matter that is familiar to the mind. So it gives some sort of mental, feeling of it being pacified. And so one can question, does that mean that one is actually deliberately breaking the prohibition to not actually go into activities that give a certain result? I mean, it's a material activity and that it's giving some result. And this is an interesting point. And one can't deny that there's a necessity for the mind to have sufficient that allows it to be pacified, that one can function properly. So the regulation is necessary to make everything controlled. So one doesn't give it free rein. So, I'm permitting, 2 YouTube watchings at a particular time in the day, and I'm going to restrict it to that. And when I actually want to move, do the scan of the list of, the 20 more that are available on that subject, no, 2 for today. If I need to, tomorrow will be 2, or I'm going to do this, right now I need to do it, 3 times a week, but maybe in the future I'll be able to cut it down to 2 times a week. So, but one doesn't regulate it. You put it within a time frame, so it's all manageable. It's not like giving free rein to the mind, because that leads to that sense of discontent. I mean, there's discontent because you've gone beyond what's needed for pacifying the mind. So, and then the question of one's performing devotional activity. So one understands that, one is dealing with envious feelings, let's say. And that implies that there's a sense of lacking something that somebody else has. So it's an understanding of lack. So, how does one get that feeling of satisfaction or fullness? So again, if one performs the particular devotional activity, understanding that this is in relation to Lord Krishna, and one's very self is connecting with Lord Krishna, there is an automatic sense of satisfaction because one's in connection with the supreme whole. There's nothing lacking in Krishna. So just making that connection through some devotional activity that that one performs, there's naturally a sense of great satisfaction and completeness and wholeness. There's no lack. So one needs to hold on to that and repeat that activity, and it overrides the other. And the other kept within a tight time frame, very regulated, and it can move forward in a more healthy way. Now, if the activity that one needs a result for pacifying the mind is falling into the forbidden activity category, which was another one of the injunctions for being on the Jnana platform that persons on the Bhakti platform are also supposed to adhere to, you don't go into the forbidden activity territory. So the forbidden activity territory may be that's outside our regulative principles. So I guess, you know, if you look at something like pornography, that would fall into that category of, you know, outside the regulative principles, because it may not be a gross enactment of a sinful activity, but on the subtle plane, it's actually participating in that. I mean, the visuals, which I guess is what's involved there. So it's taking in that visual, it's occupying the mind, and it falls into the forbidden category. So that would have to be eliminated. Somehow or other, one has to, you know, like spit at that desire in the mind and like cast it aside, and do arrange one's life in such a way that one doesn't have access to that. If it means, you know, throwing one's computer away, so be it. You know, one has to be extreme with that. One can't give space to that, because that certainly is going to hamper the integrity with which one's going to approach performing a devotional act. I mean, the integrity won't be there. So that would have to be eliminated. Yeah, some thoughts.
This is related to that very much. It came up in a verse or in a purport some time back that if someone's actions are tinged with self-interest, that person cannot be truthful. And in this context of, so the discontent is coming when one is in that activity of endeavoring for some enjoyment or some security outside of Krishna. And this is why association, which is also mentioned in the verses you spoke out, is so important. Because if one's alone, it's easy to forget Paramatma is there watching you. So you do not realize you're being deceitful. But if one is in the association of devotees, then it's not even on a super gross platform. For instance, you mentioned pornography. It's simply like, you know, even whenever you're in the association of devotees, even reading some mode of goodness jnana on Facebook from some devotee feels like violating the regulative principles. You see, like, because it's like, oh, this is actually nonsense. Like, just like, there's so many small things on a very subtle level. I mean, even in the introduction of Krishna consciousness, like unnecessary consumption of media of whatever kind is actually a violation of the regulative principles. But if you're in the association of devotees, of course, some people are doing that in terms of Yukta Vyagra. Maybe they're on that platform, they can do it. But in the association of devotees, actually it becomes more refined, because it's you. you're very aware of the deception that is involved because you feel uncomfortable, right? Even the slightest bit of nonsense, yeah. What to speak of the gross things. And in terms of just practical application for someone who is living alone, I myself did that. My first 2 years of Krishna consciousness, I threw away my computer. And, yeah. So my only access to internet was when I was at work. So one word there, the element of deception is very important. Like one word, like if people are around you, then one must secretly watch a YouTube video, you know, because you're not going to watch it in front of your coworker, right? It's very powerful association. I mean, I'm really just saying that it's very powerful. Otherwise, one has to fight gross with gross by throwing away your computer and by going through different extremes.
The point you're making of that the association or just living in a situation where there are others who are practicing devotional life is an automatic check on that indulgence in those activities that have the, you know, material mind-pacifying result. And I mean, I don't know that I would agree that any, you know, watching of YouTube falls into the category of, yeah, of sin. Okay. So.
I said unnecessary immediate consumption. Unnecessary. Okay. That means prajalpa,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So, yes, that would fall into the that fourth principle of talking unnecessarily or even hearing unnecessary, because that's what that is. It's taking in the visuals or taking in the auditory. So that would fall into that category. There can be, I mean, what you've highlighted is important because there can be situations where somebody may be very far ahead in their devotional life, but they still have that addiction to perhaps some taking in of sinful visual stuff. And that can be done. There may be association of devotees, but the person has some private living area and that can still be done in that area. So that is the problematic one. That's where, indeed, even with the association, the person is not given that up, that addiction, that craving for that, and is maintaining it. So there can be even gross dishonesty where the person is not even seeking help, because there may be a need for directly seeking help from devotee association, like saying, acknowledging this is a problem, I do this in private, I need help. So it may be, you know, more even more than just association, it may be the necessary for a person to openly acknowledge to fellow devotees, I actually am performing this activity, this taking in of visual auditory stuff that falls into the sinful category, I need help. So it may be even more directly acknowledging than just a comment. Because one can maintain that kind of secretive, ongoing craving, addiction for years. Who knows if one is not understanding the necessity to cast it aside, or may one may understand it but not be willing to give it up, but at least one should have a desire to try and help oneself, and acknowledging it to devotees would be the best thing, because then indeed the association could actually find many ways of buffering that person from their addiction.
Yeah, that's why deception is it's a good trigger symptom. Like, oh, if there's something I feel like I need to hide, then deception is the symptom. Like, oh, I feel like I need to hide this, that means it needs to be addressed. And like you said, taking shelter of devotees is a good...
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes something that is needed for the mind could be confused with self-interest. because it seems so integral to one's functioning, even though it may be, my spiritual master has used the term sickly addiction. So it may be a sickly addiction. So in that case, the person may not fully understand that there's deception going on because it seems so integral to the needs, the mental, emotional needs. So it may be sickly. So the person may not even understand that there's dishonesty or deception in the fullest sense. One doesn't know the workings of the mind of each individual. But certainly, in a more extreme case, if somehow or other the person goes further and takes a step to reveal to devotees, that would be essential, because then proper help can be given and encouragement to perhaps even seek, you know, professional help, because it may be, it's really derail a person, and the person may have gone a long time holding on to that need for that mental pacification, and it may even manifest publicly to the great embarrassment of that person, be much further in their devotional life. So it's good to nip it in the bud.
Hare Krishna, can I say one last thing? Actually, you answered my second question. I was going to ask it, and you answered it. But there's one quote I appreciated. Jesus says, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." So people see the temple as people for saints. It's for sinners. And that's what it's a place. And there's so many pastimes. Bhavamanka Thakur, he was going after prostitutes. And he still got the mercy of the Lord because he was trying his best. So one thing I appreciate about so many stories is that our mind is like Sukhacharya. It says, when you have faults, surrender to depression, go away from the devotees. But that's not the case. There's so many stories, and you answered my question in that regard, is that we have to be humble. I need help, some professional help, and pretty much the only professional help is the temple. So you might as well come to the temple.
Well, certainly the discussion of these extraordinary conversations between these exalted personalities is fuels that kind of self-examination, and so it can indeed change one's life. You're quite correct, Jai Baladev. Of course, it even though one may bring lifetimes of sinful activities on the subtle plane that one may not be even fully conscious of, the fact that one is sincerely wanting to do things that further the mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna goes a long way to completely burning off all of that there's sinful tendencies, and of course the chanting of the holy name, that's completely uprooting those sinful tendencies. So indeed, there's no external professional help that can do quite the same thing. But at least if it's a severe case, just helping the person acknowledge a difficulty, that's a huge thing for somebody who has a difficulty here that may not be there. So thank you very much. I appreciate very much the thoughtful input on this topic. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. But the person had a special boon, Jai Baladev. So he didn't really. Yes. But offer your devotional nature. Thank you.
Yeah.